Usually when we talk about driving, there's this expectation of a shared reality, right? Like a social contract.
Right.
You stay in your lane, I stay in mine, we both stop at the red light, and the whole system just functions. But it relies entirely on the idea that everyone around you is actually participating in that same physical space.
Yeah, it's a cooperative system, basically, built on mutual attention. We all sort of silently agree to process the same real-world data at the exact same time, so we, avoid hitting each other.
But then you look at the reality of a modern commute, and you realize that social contract is completely shattered now. I mean, we're out there sharing the road with people who are, for all intents and purposes, entirely checked out of
Yes, I
reality.
do. Come here.
They are navigating heavy machinery while their brains are living inside a 6-inch glowing screen.
It has really become a massive systemic hazard.
Yeah.
And because it's so normalized, because
Uh-huh.
literally everyone has a smartphone, the actual danger of it is just hiding in plain sight.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because today we are digging into a really comprehensive guide published by the law offices of Norman Gershon. And our mission for this deep dive is to explore the hidden mechanics behind this hazard.
Right.
We want to understand exactly why texting behind the wheel is so catastrophic on a neurological and physical level. And we're also going to look at the actual playbook for what you need to do if you find yourself in an accident.
Which is crucial.
Exactly. And why the legal realities of proving these cases mean having a specific type of heavyweight attorney on your side is critical.
Yeah. And to ground this in reality for you, the listener, we really have to talk about where this is happening. The source material doesn't just focus on abstract national statistics. It zeroes in on the specific geography of New York City and Westchester County.
The local roads.
Exactly. These dangers are lurking on your familiar daily commutes.
Mm-hmm.
So we are talking about I-287, the Hutchinson River Parkway, the Bronx River Parkway, the Sawmill River Parkway, and of course, the notoriously unpredictable Cross Bronx Expressway.
Oh man, just hearing the phrase Cross Bronx Expressway makes my blood pressure spike. I mean, I actively avoid it if I can.
Well, for good reason, right? I mean, the density of traffic is immense.
Yeah.
But the guide also highlights that it's not just the major highways. It's the local arterial roads across White Plains, Yonkers, New Rochelle, Manhattan, Queens, Brooklyn, and the Bronx.
It's everywhere, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is happening right in your backyard on the streets you navigate every single day to get groceries or, drop the kids at school.
So I think we need to start by looking at the physical mechanics of the distraction itself. Because I think people suffer from a lot of cognitive dissonance here.
Call
they think,
once.
Well, I'm an experienced driver. I know how to multitask. Like, why is looking at a phone fundamentally different from leaning over to adjust the radio or taking a bite of a sandwich?
It comes down to what the source material identifies as the triple threat of distraction. When you adjust the radio, you might take your hand off the wheel or glance away for a fraction of a second, but it's a familiar, low cognitive task.
Right.
But a smartphone. A smartphone demands an entirely different, immersive level of engagement across three distinct categories simultaneously.
Okay, so let's break those down. The first one the text mentions is visual distraction, which, I mean, that's fairly obvious. Your eyes are physically off the road and looking at a screen. You are temporarily blind to your physical surroundings.
Second is manual distraction. You're taking one, or sometimes both hands, off the steering wheel to hold the device, maybe swipe, or type out a message. So your physical ability to swerve or stabilize the car.
Or do any evasive maneuvers.
Exactly. That ability is severely compromised.
Okay, so visual and manual make sense. I look away, I take a hand off. But the third one, the mental distraction, is where I think people really trick themselves. They genuinely think the brain can handle two complex things at once.
And that is the most dangerous myth of all. The brain does not multitask. It tasks switches. Think of your brain's processing power like a computer CPU. Driving in traffic requires a massive amount of cognitive RAM, to monitor speed, track other vehicles, anticipate hazards.
Right. There's a lot going on.
Right. And when you start reading a text message, your visual cortex and your language processing centers, they essentially hijack those resources. The text message takes up, say, 90% of your CPU, leaving only 10% to run the background program of driving.
Wow. So if I'm trying to visualize this, it's not like patting your head and rubbing your stomach. It's more like trying to juggle blindfolded while simultaneously trying to solve a complex algebra problem in your head.
That is a brilliant way to frame it.
Because you're asking your brain to do three physically and mentally demanding things at once, and literally none of them are actually driving the car.
And the neuroscience completely backs that up. Even after you put the phone down and look back at the road, there is a phenomenon called attention residue.
Attention residue? What is that?
It means it takes your brain several seconds to fully shift its processing power back to the physical environment. During that lag, you are looking at the road, but you aren't actually seeing or processing the hazards.
Okay, let me push back on this for a second because I know what the counter argument is going to be here. People will say, look, I only look at my phone when I'm stopped at a stoplight, or I just do a quick 2-second glance when I'm on a straight stretch of I-287.
Right, right.
Is a 2-second glance really that apocalyptic?
Well, what's fascinating here is the sheer physics of the situation, which people radically underestimate. We humans are terrible at conceptualizing the relationship between time and high speed. The source points out a chilling mathematical reality. At highway speeds, a vehicle travels hundreds of feet in just a few seconds.
So let's say I'm doing 65 on the hutch. How far am I actually moving if I just glance down to read a notification?
If you are driving 65 miles per hour, you are traveling nearly 100 feet every single second.
Wait, really? 100 feet a second?
Yes. So if you glance at your phone for 3 seconds to read a text, you have just driven the entire length of a football field entirely blind.
A whole football field. That is terrifying.
And we also have to factor in perception reaction time. In an emergency, a human driver needs about 1.5 seconds just to recognize a threat, and then another 1.5 seconds to physically move their foot to the brake pedal.
Okay, so that's 3 seconds right there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you were looking at a screen during those critical 3 seconds, you never even begin the reaction process. Say a vehicle ahead of you slams on its brakes, or a piece of debris falls into your lane. You hit it at full highway speed without ever touching your own brakes.
So if your brain literally cannot process a stopped car ahead of you on the highway, it makes you wonder what happens when you introduce the chaos of local streets into the mix, like when you take 3 seconds of blindness and drop it into a really dynamic environment.
Yeah, and the source material highlights a very specific pattern of crashes that emerge from this exact failure of perception.
Right. The text lists rear-end collisions as a major one. I mean, if you are looking at your lap and the traffic ahead on the Bronx River Parkway suddenly halts, you're plowing right into them at whatever speed you were coasting at.
And then you have intersection crashes, which are often much more severe. A distracted motorist whose attention residue is still focused on an email will blow right through a red light, or completely miss a stop sign, or T-bone a vehicle that is legally entering an intersection.
Because they just didn't see it.
They simply didn't process the changing colors of the traffic signal.
The guide also specifically notes high-speed highway pileups, pointing out the rapid traffic changes on I-287 and the Cron Bronx. Anyone who drives the Cross Bronx knows that traffic can go from 55 miles per hour to a dead standstill in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you aren't paying attention there, you aren't just hitting one car. You're triggering a chain reaction, multi-vehicle catastrophe.
And while highway collisions involve incredible kinetic force, we also really have to emphasize the tragic reality for pedestrians here. When you look at busy, densely populated areas like White Plains, Yonkers, Manhattan, and the Bronx, you have massive pedestrian traffic. Families, commuters, kids walking to school.
Who have absolutely zero physical protection. Like, none.
None at all. A pedestrian in a crosswalk assumes the approaching driver sees them. They make eye contact with the windshield. But if that driver is swiping on social media, looking away for even a fraction of a second leads to an entirely preventable collision.
The physical toll of this, as detailed in the text, is just grim. We're talking about horrific life-altering injuries, traumatic brain injuries, or TBIs, where the brain violently impacts the inside of the skull. Severe spinal cord injuries.
Herniated discs, broken bones.
Internal organ damage, permanent disabilities, and even wrongful death.
We really have to focus on the WHY here.
Yeah.
Why these specific injuries are so devastating beyond just the immediate physical pain. The physical toll directly triggers an overwhelming financial avalanche.
How so?
Well, when you suffer a spinal cord injury or severe TBI, you aren't just in the hospital for a few days. You're immediately hit with the cost of the ambulance, the emergency room, emergency surgeries, intensive care.
Plus the months or years of rehabilitation costs, right?
Yeah.
And the potential for lifelong at-home care.
Exactly. And simultaneously, because of your injuries, you are completely incapacitated. You are suffering from lost income. You cannot work. So you have maximum life-altering expenses hitting you at the exact moment your income drops to absolute zero.
Yeah.
It is a formula for complete financial ruin, and it was entirely forced upon you because someone else decided a text message couldn't wait.
Which brings us to a really crucial part of this deep dive. If the worst happens, say you are sitting at a red light in New Rochelle or merging onto the Sawmill, and you are hit by a distracted driver, what is the actual playbook? What do you do in those first chaotic minutes?
The source outlines very clear, immediate action steps. The moment an accident happens, your first priority is safety and locking down the reality of the scene.
Yeah.
You call 911 immediately to report the accident and get an official police report generated.
Right.
And you must seek immediate medical attention, even if you feel fine. Adrenaline is a powerful chemical. It can easily mask severe internal bleeding or concussions for hours.
The text also stresses documenting the scene, taking photos of the car damage, the skid marks or lack thereof, and gathering witness information right there on the street before people drive away.
Right, because you want to preserve the physical evidence of the environment before tow trucks move the vehicles or witnesses just forget what they saw.
Okay, but let me ask you this. Let's say I do all that. I get the photos, I call the police. Why can't I just call the other driver's insurance company or even my own right away and just explain what happened? Just say, hey, I was stopped. This guy was clearly looking at his lap. He hit me. Why not just clear it up immediately so they can pay for my car?
That is precisely what you should never do. The source lays down a very stern rule here. You must avoid discussing fault with any insurance company before speaking with an attorney.
Why is that so dangerous, though? Aren't they literally in the business of processing claims?
They are in the business of generating profit. They are massive corporations focused on their bottom line, and their primary goal is to minimize or completely deny claims. If you speak to an insurance adjuster unrepresented on a recorded line, they will use psychological tactics to get you to say something they can twist.
Wow, really? Like what?
If you casually say, "I'm sorry, I just didn't see him coming," they will use that to claim you weren't paying attention either, shifting a percentage of the blame onto you under comparative negligence laws to reduce your payout.
Oh, wow. So any attempt to be polite or helpful will just be weaponized to save them money.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, proving liability in a distracted driving case is actually a highly technical legal war. It's not just your word against the other driver's word. You need hard, undeniable evidence to force the insurance company's hand.
But how does someone even go about proving the other person was on their phone? It's not like the driver's going to admit it.
They never admit it. This is where the legal mechanics come into play. A strategic legal team won't just ask nicely. They will legally subpoena the driver's cell phone records directly from the carrier to prove a data packet was being transmitted at the exact millisecond of the crash.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. And they will secure surveillance footage from nearby businesses or traffic cameras before it gets deleted.
The source also mentions accident reconstruction analysis.
Yes. They bring in engineering experts who look at the crush depth of the bumper, the coefficient of friction on the asphalt, and the lack of pre-impact skid marks to mathematically prove the driver never even touched the brakes because their eyes were on a screen.
So it's basically CSI for car crashes.
Pretty much. And you simply cannot coordinate a multi-tiered investigation like that on your own while you are recovering from a spinal injury in a hospital bed.
Which brings us to the solution presented in the source material. Because approving liability is this complex and the insurance companies have billions of dollars to fight you can't just hire a random lawyer off a billboard.
Right. You need someone with a specific pedigree.
Exactly. And looking at the source, this is where the guide introduces their own firm, the Law Offices of Norman Gershon.
The guide positions Norman Gershon as a veteran in this specific ecosystem. He has more than 35 years of experience representing accident victims throughout Westchester County, White Plains, Yonkers, and New York City.
There is a specific line in the text that stands out to me regarding his reputation. It says he is the lawyer other attorneys call to try their toughest cases. What does that actually mean in the legal world?
Well, in the legal ecosystem, there's a distinct hierarchy. There are high-volume settlement lawyers who just try to process cases quickly for whatever the insurance company initially offered.
Just churning through them.
Exactly. And then there are trial lawyers. Taking a complex case to a jury verdict requires fronting hundreds of thousands of dollars in expert witness fees and spending weeks in a courtroom.
That's a huge commitment.
It is. Many lawyers just don't have the resources or the skill set for that. So when an insurance company refuses to settle fairly, those lawyers refer the case to someone like Norman Gershon. It signals to the insurance companies that he is a legitimate trial threat. Insurance companies know and fear Norman Gershon.
So they know he won't just fold and take a lowball offer.
Precisely.
And the source points out a crucial detail for anyone worrying about the cost of hiring a heavyweight like him. It's on a contingency fee basis. You only pay if you win. There is zero financial risk to the victim.
It allows a victim with massive medical debt to hire top-tier representation without paying a single dime out of pocket.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because, you know, talk is cheap, but the source actually provides the receipts. There's a list of verdicts and settlements here, and one really jumps out. A $16.5 million verdict in Betancourt v. NYCTA.
It's staggering.
I mean, how does an attorney even secure a verdict that massive against a formidable opponent like the New York City Transit Authority?
Winning a $16.5 million verdict against a massive city entity requires an impenetrable case. It means the legal team successfully utilized those accident reconstructionists, expert medical testimonies, and undeniable physical evidence to prove total negligence.
They really had to build an ironclad narrative.
Right. They had to convince a jury not just that the accident happened, but that the victim's life was so profoundly altered that it warranted tens of millions of dollars for lifelong medical care and lost wages.
And it's not an isolated number. The guide lists a $14.5 million settlement with the MTA.
Right.
A $5.445 million verdict in Mungo v. Traviseo. A $5.068 million verdict in Young v. Ball and Nissan Lyft of NY.
The numbers are just huge.
There's also a $3.75 million verdict in Hernandez Santos v. Ag Depot. A $3 million verdict in Carmona v. Ester Transportation. And down to a $2.5 million verdict in Yurkovich v. Sippen right there in Westchester County.
Yeah.
I mean, these numbers show a consistent pattern of fighting for the absolute maximum mathematical value of the injuries.
They do. But beyond the numbers, the source includes direct testimonials from past clients, which offers a look at how he actually operates with the victims.
Yeah, the quotes paint a really interesting picture. One client describes him as smart, experienced, compassionate, tough. Another said he worked his magic and got me a bigger settlement than I expected.
I found the quote from a former trial client particularly revealing. They specifically noted his courtroom presence, saying he was thorough, well-prepared, and had a highly professional courtroom demeanor.
So it's not just yelling and pounding the table.
Right, it's just a duality. He treats the traumatized clients with empathy, but approaches the defense with relentless, calculated preparation.
So to our listener, if you or someone you love has been injured by a distracted driver anywhere in NYC or Westchester County, the source provides the direct lifeline.
Yeah.
The phone number you need to reach the law offices of Norman Gershon is 914-485-1444. Do not try to outsmart the insurance adjuster on your own. Call the lawyer, the other lawyer's call. Again, that's 914-485-4444.
It really is the most vital step in protecting your physical and financial future.
So what does this all mean? We've covered the neuroscience, the devastating physics, and the legal battleground today. It means that while distracted driving is this terrifying, entirely preventable epidemic happening every day on our local roads, you are not powerless.
You're not.
If you become a victim, you have options, and you have powerful allies who understand the exact mechanisms needed to hold negligent drivers accountable.
But until you need those allies, the guide offers a vital reminder on how to protect yourself right now. You cannot control the actions of the driver swiping through social media in the lane next to you.
Nope.
You must drive defensively. Maintain safe following distances so you have that critical buffer zone to react. And always assume the cars around you might do something entirely unpredictable.
Head on a swivel. Always keep your eyes on the road because the person next to you probably isn't.
And, you know, looking at the sheer scale of this epidemic, this raises an important question that goes beyond just the driver in the moment. We know that smartphones and apps are intentionally engineered by tech companies to be as addictive as humanly possible.
Absolutely.
They use algorithms and variable reward schedules to chemically compel us to look at the screen, essentially hijacking our dopamine systems.
They are literally designed by neuroscientists to steal your attention.
Exactly. So as these catastrophic accidents continue to mount, it makes you wonder, will the legal landscape eventually have to evolve?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Will we reach a point where we hold not just the individual drivers responsible, but the multi-billion dollar technology companies themselves accountable for engineering these irresistible lethal distractions?
Suing the app makers for the car crash? That is a massive paradigm shift. I mean, a whole new frontier of liability to think about.
It really is.
But until that day comes, you need someone who has mastered the legal landscape of today. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Please stay safe out there on the roads. Put the phone in the glove box. And remember, if you ever need the legal heavyweight in Westchester, NYC, the number to call is 914-485-4444. Take care, everyone.